Hello, and welcome to Building Sustainability Podcast. I'm your host, Geoffrey Hart, aka Geoffrey the Natural Builder. Building Sustainability consists of conversations with designers, builders, makers, dreamers, and doers, exploring the wide world of sustainability in the built environment by talking to wonderful people who are doing excellent things. Hello, and welcome to episode 55, which is the second part of my excellent conversation with Craig White. This one focuses more on the specifics of two of Craig's companies, ModCell and Agile Homes. I'd say that you don't necessarily need to listen to them in order, but it might make slightly more sense if you head to the first part of this conversation, episode 54. So before we get into it, a small update on the tiny house build. I shall be collecting in a few weeks my flooring, which is from a small company called UK Hardwoods, who are from just the other side of Exmoor to me. Feels really good to be supporting a small company. When I phoned them up and had a nice chat with the chap who does the sawing, he told me that I needed to get my order in soon because they're about to shut down the company so they get married and go on a honeymoon. So I like that kind of level of small. Also, I really wanted to get UK-grown solid ash flooring. Ash is one of my favourite trees, with such a history of use for so many products in this country. And it's now, of course, tragically being wiped out by ash dieback. So it isn't going to be around for too long. There is a lovely book called The Man Who Made Things Out of Trees by Robert Penn. I think I've mentioned it before, which really nicely highlights how important the ash tree has been. So yeah, I really wanted to honour the humble ash tree, and it's handily a lighter coloured wood, which is great for my smaller space. But it's also very hard wearing, and weight-wise it's lighter than the sort of more common oak floor, which is key for the tiny house. And most oak flooring, I think, is from Europe, so this is good to get the UK species. I also wanted it to be solid wood flooring, because I'm trying very hard to avoid any chemical nasties that you can sometimes get in the lamination of plywood for engineered floors. So all in all, pretty pleased with that. Another thing I've done is I've ordered some UK cedar cladding, which is going around my front door to break up the cork cladding, which wraps the rest of the house. This also allows me to put a little bit of the cork cladding on the inside of the building at this point, which gives me some of that fantastic biophilic goodness inside. Again, I wanted to use UK wood for this. UK's grown cedar is a lot more knotty than the Canadian version, which at first I was a little bit put off by, but I really wanted this house to sort of fit into the landscape. And so if that's what our local trees are doing, that's what I want to honour. Obviously, the cork is coming from Portugal, so yeah, sometimes you can't get it all right, can you? So yes, I guess the bad news from this week is that the cork coming from Portugal isn't going to get here for another month and a half, so my hopes of finishing the exterior have been dashed or held up slightly. Not to worry, there's plenty more to get on with. Okay, I think that's it from me. I'm back at the end briefly. I do need to say that there is one naughty word in this episode. It's the S word. I think it's maybe the least offensive of the naughty words. But if that's going to upset you, then maybe this isn't the episode for you. Okay, enjoy Craig White.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We first did our first prefabricated straw bale panel in 2000 or 2001. And I had done a lot of, like everybody, buying the books, reading, buying and reading, going and getting involved and seeing, and saw that straw was good. Straw is good. And it's a byproduct, co-product, all of those fantastic things. So my question was, how does this come into the mainstream? How does this move out of, let's just say, mid Wales with a group of dedicated co-housing people wanting to do it? You know, how do you move it from there into mainstream? And the challenge of the Nebraskan method of construction is you're more weather dependent than other ways of building. So, and also if you were speaking to a main contractor doing a school all out of straw, they will immediately talk about three pigs. How do I deal with straw? Oh my God, will it catch fire? Where do we store it? All of those questions, and quite naturally good questions. So the ModCell stands for modular cellulose. That's why it's called modular cellulose. So a straw bale is a module of cellulose. If you stack them up and put them into a wooden frame, that is a module of cellulose. The frame is timber and the insulation is straw. And so prefabrication or modern methods of construction became the journey to us answering that question, how do you bring it into mainstream use and not just beautifully constructed one-offs in lovely parts of rural Wales or whatever. And all of that is really good. I love the self-build. I love the Amish barn raising, getting your hands dirty and making. But having worked in mainstream construction, just thinking, well, that's not going to fly with a tier one main contractor. They're just going to go, no, we're not doing it that way. So it was about how you bring straw bale construction into mainstream use through prefabrication. And in effect, all I did was, if you want to put a window into a Nebraskan wall, you build a tube of timber and the straw goes around it. I just said, oh, we could just reverse that and create a big tube of timber and fill it up with straw. So all it is a simple reversal of how you put a window into a load-bearing straw bale wall. And we just flipped it around the other way and said, oh, that a high-performance prefabricated building system. Mm-hmm. That's how ModCell came into being.
Nice. I've been to the, the Bale House, University of Bath?
Bale House of Bath, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been in that, and I was struck by the very modern appearance of it. And that's something I've seen it sort of again and again from ModCell, and I've always been appreciative of that, because I think the aesthetic, I bang on about this quite a lot, but the aesthetic of that sort of wobbly wall thing is great for a certain amount of people, but some people it's a massive turnoff.
And partly it's also deliberate from us to say, okay, we've got them past the idea that you could build a store. Okay, is it going to look deep green and hairy? And I love deep green and hairy, but most of the construction industry doesn't do deep green or hairy. It doesn't do deep green or hairy. So, so part of it is a deliberate journey into saying the aesthetic need not be the wonderful one that comes from building organically with hands, but can become an aesthetic if you want, using prefabrication. And today our buildings look like whatever the designer or we want them to look like. Mm-hmm. But the Bale House of Bath, for me, is a synthesis, talking like an architect, of the system is the aesthetic. There is nothing redundant about the look or feel of the rain screen is just where the panels join. And so the aesthetic is driven by the way we've made those panels. For some, they don't like it, and that's okay. There are lots of buildings people don't like. For others, they go, oh, well, that's interesting and modern and different. And it is certainly, it was a different looking sort of building, but entirely dictated by assembling panels of straw together.
Yeah. So for the people listening, can you sort of describe its sort of overall look?
So it's kind of cubic, and each face of the cube is made up of four panels. So those are the prefabricated panels of straw. And then the panels have what we would call a solid panel, is a three-bale panel. Then we'd have a two-bale panel and a one-bale window, or a one-bale panel and a two-bale window. So all the windows are all set out on the module of what the straw wants to do, not what we would like the windows to be. Uh-huh. So it kind of looks like a cube, and each face has four squares on it, some of which is solid, some of which have windows in them. And then where all the panels join, we have cedar cladding, which protects the joints and protects the edges of the lime render and the glue lam structure, which is the edge of the prefabricated panel. And so from a distance, it's cubic. As you walk up to it, it's four panels per frame. And when you walk up and look close, you can see how the thing is made. And the elegance for me is between inside and outside. Inside a high performance, low carbon space is just two materials, just lime and straw. So the internal face is lime and lime plaster, and the external face is lime render, just brushed back to give it a surface. And there are some other bits and pieces in it. There are wooden dowels holding these bales together, as you might expect. And then we do have some stainless steel rods which tie the top and the bottom panel together and help support the... they're just 10 mil. There are two 10 mil rods per face. And so that's a permanent tension setter for the panel. And it's the least amount of materials other than an adobe wall I can imagine.
Yeah, it's pretty minimal, isn't it? I like it.
It's pure, that's what it is. But it has an aesthetic, and not everybody likes prefabrication, and I can understand people say, how do people get involved in the making? We developed a system called Flying Factories, so we would say, yes, you can make these things, come to a local farmer's barn nearby, and we all make the panels together. So we brought some of that Nebraskan, let's do it all together on site. We said, let's do it all together off site. And so the youngest people involved in making our panels have been 6-year-olds, not very productive, and there's lots of health and safety. And the oldest has been 78. And, you know, they're touching straw, they're involved with the timber and stuff like that. But it's not a Nebraskan method community build.
Yes. And the modular system, I worked with Greencore for one of their buildings, Ian Pritchett's.
Oh, right, yeah.
And yep. I couldn't believe just the speed at which we put up a whole story of a big old house in an afternoon. Yep. And it was so impressive.
Well, Bale House at Bath, the to get weather tight in 10, 12, 11 years ago, was 2.5 days. Today, we do that in 5 hours.
Fantastic.
It's got really fast.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a crane and lots of guys in high-vis gear and big drills.
Because, the Bale House, it's moved, hasn't it?
Yeah. The Bale House has been on three locations.
Right.
It is... So we... The ground floor of Bale House was used on Grand Designs Live for Kevin MacLeod's. Kevin MacLeod has two shows a year, one at XL, one at NEC, pre-COVID he did. And that became a project working with the architects Duncan Baker Brown. The top floor of that building was by Facet, who work with CNC cut plywood. And we did the ground floor, and then ModCell built the whole thing. We built the whole building, and the plan was to build it. Not the plan, we did. We built a building, the house that Kevin built, it was called. We did it in a week, live on television, 10, 11 years ago. Then the show finished, so we got to take it down again. So we had to take it down. We put the ground floor of the ModCell panels into a Essex barn, and it was stored there for 18 months. And then the Bale House at Bath research project got funded. So we then brought it from Essex to Bath, then built another, our own top floor on the top of it. The university then said, oh, our master plan says we're going to build a new building, a six-story building there. Can you demolish it? And we said, no, we're not going to demolish it. We said, that's your master planning problem, not our problem. So we're not moving it unless you pay us. And then we, so what we said, we think we can move it. We're not going to demolish it, but we could move it. So we moved it 80 meters away, and it is now one of the estates department's offices. So effectively, that building has been in three different places, which demonstrates that actually, that's a kind of Japanese way of thinking about buildings. Don't build for permanence, build for impermanence. In this case, build, design and build to move.
Yeah.
And that's part of the thinking behind Agile as well.
Nice. Well, yeah. I mean, I was curious to know if that, the design, so the ModCell design, whether it was designed to move.
it's six of one and half a dozen of the other is the truth. When you design for prefabrication, you have to design for ease of assembly. And then at that point, in theory, there should be an ease of disassembly. Sometimes the screw heads get kind of knackered, so you have to, sometimes that won't work. But I kind of like the Japanese way of thinking that buildings are not permanent edifices and that they could be reused, relocated. And so a six of one, a half a dozen of the other. I never imagined that it would have three lines in three different locations.
Yeah.
But we knew it could be.
Was there any sort of, damage or, was there things that didn't go back together?
Yeah. I think that's the interesting thing about prefabrication. You design for simplicity. And so when things go wrong, so there are two problems there. If you've designed a system that repeats itself, if you've designed it wrong, that repeats itself. but also, they then become fairly robust things to repair because you know exactly how they're made. If I were to name the bales in Bale House, each one gave them a name, I could tell you where they are all are today. The exact, so I know where they are. I know which one's cut in half. Which one we had to. If I were thinking about that in that way, and at that point, that build system becomes quite robust, and we have had. We've had a project where water got into one of the panels in 2010 when we had those unbelievable once in 200 year storms. We were building the Knoll West Media Centre in Bristol. The rain poured and we had 21,000 litres of water drop on top of the head of one of our panels and it got soaked. So we were able in situ just to take the straw out and put it back in. And the Nebraskan method will also allow you to take a bale out and put a bale in. And we've had to do that a couple of times. So, yes, I think designing for reuse and more importantly for me, if you go truly circular, designing for all of the components to come out and find a better life or a putting the nutrients back onto the earth in 100 years' time.
Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, well, that sort of leads us really nicely on to Agile and the work you're doing there. Give us the intro.
So Agile does so it's a housing solution predominantly. So we deliver low carbon, affordable homes for people in housing need faster than conventional development would normally allow, and it's a response to the housing crisis and the climate emergency. So we are working with the similar materials, renewable carbon capturing materials, but now our innovation has moved to taking the idea that buildings could be relocated and doing it at pace and not paying for land. So there's a whole series of other stuff other than straw. Mm-hmm. We design them to meet all the building regulations. They're triple glazed, super insulated, everything super airtight, all the things you'd expect. But they comply with the Caravan Act.
Okay.
But they're not caravans. And at that point, we can move them. So they are designed to be moved, at which point in planning legislation terms under the Caravan Act, they are not seen as conventional development and therefore not subject to planning regulations.
Uh-huh.
We do both. So the first one we built on a microsite in Bristol in an area called Knowle West on land that was free and hidden in plain sight. And we built it in 10 weeks without planning permission. So at that point, we were doing guerrilla housing. But then we invited the mayor to sleep in it, the planners, you know, and we've normalized that relationship. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't necessarily encourage everybody to get into guerrilla housing. But what we did was able to demonstrate that not only could you build low carbon sustainably with the right materials, you could also do it fast, and you could also do it in an interesting and new way. Today, we are deploying under the Caravan Act and also with full planning permission applied to it. So at that point, straw is now... So I say we do four things. People-centered design, where finance via grants and debt and whatever can flow into projects using a process of inclusion. And then we have a product that happens to be made out of straw, super insulated and triple glazed. So at that point, again, I'm circling back to systems thinking. And that is around how do you change the delivery of housing in the UK, which is largely dominated by 10 volume house builders who don't have any motivation to build affordable homes.
Sure, yeah.
And that's fine, because there's a machine for making profit. We should stop asking that machine not to make profit, because it just doesn't want to. So we work in what we call the vacuum of the housing crisis, and we found a way of building homes without buying land. So there's been, because the housing crisis has got so bad, a lot of people are, so the tiny home movement is rising. People are interested.
That's what I'm building.
In how they can, fantastic. Mm. So how you can build a more compact way of living, and perhaps tiny homes don't always need to move, but in America, that's kind of where it came from. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always need to be the case. So the challenge that I saw was you cannot get affordable homes to be delivered by a machine designed to make profit. You can't. It's you're banging your head against a wall.
Yeah.
So a developer does three things. That's all they do. They buy their land, they build their hardware, their homes, and they sell them for as much money as they can. So it's buy, build, land. Buy land, build your home, sell. Buy, build, sell, buy, build, sell. And that machine will keep on making money for buying Range Rovers and things like that. So for me, postcode, I can't influence postcode. So that's a kind of societal thing. So I can't change how people think about Clifton or Knowle West or whatever. That's people that do that. So then the reason I call housing hardware in terms of how you build it, hardware has a fixed cost. A brick costs roughly what a brick costs. The big boys get 10% discount, maybe 15% discount. But it's largely a fixed cost. And everybody thinks there must be a magic way of building cheaper. There isn't. Not if you're trying to meet today's carbon challenge. You can't. It's just can't be done. Even building with straw. Yeah, Maybe with polystyrene, but that's poisonous. So then the only thing left is land. So I simply ask the question, could you do a development model that doesn't buy land? And the answer is yes. Can you not pay for land? Yes, you can. And that is a land assembly attitude towards who owns land. And the biggest owner of land in the country, other than the oligarchs and the ancients families, is the state. And when a local authority or a council says it owns land, it doesn't. It has a fairly exotic landlordship relationship to land, which is state-owned, and the local authority is effectively a landlord of that. And you know, we know this, so that when a local authority wants to sell a parcel of land, that local authority, unless it's delegated powers, has to ask the Secretary of State for permission to dispose the land. And so you go, okay, stop talking to councils, let's go up to the state and ask, who owns that? We do. We own that. The Secretary of State is the custodian of state-owned land, so who is it? It's us. It's society that owns it. And then there was a wonderful piece of legislation brought by a Conservative MP called Richard Bacon, which is the Custom Building Community Housing Act of 2016, which insists that all local authorities in England must create a register of land that they own, which would be preferentially offered to communities to do self-build, co-housing, community-led housing. And you start to go, okay, so there's this possibility of a land supply. And then the local authority is obliged to achieve something called best value when it disposes of its assets. Best value doesn't mean the highest price, because the local authority has a statutory obligation to work on behalf of the community it represents. So it's meant to do good things. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you can therefore have land transferred from state ownership via a local authority to community-led housing goods at groups at social value, which in reality means a pound.
Fantastic.
And we have four projects where land has been transacted at £1 to community-led housing groups. And that's the land supply. Then if you put homes that don't use foundations, so you don't glue the home down to the ground, but have the potential of attaching it to the ground and detaching it, then it's considered different in planning terms. Mm-hmm. And then you create two asset groups. The land can be held in trust by the community, and then the housing can be supplied by Agile Homes. And we do the enabling. We do all the joining of those dots up. We do the piece of work. So at this point, we're not talking straw. We're talking about the equitable access to land at nil or zero, low or zero cost. And at that point, we're innovating in finance and land assembly as much as we've ever innovated in building with straw.
Yeah.
And that is what Agile Homes is.
Whoa.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey there, I'm Mick from the Mick and Pat Show.
That's right, and I'm Pat.
Looking for a podcast that's like catching up with old friends? Well, you're in luck.
We're here to bring you weekly doses of lifestyle commentary, discuss culture and politics, and top it off with the occasional beer and film reviews.
But it's not just about us. We're a community. Our listeners are our kin, and we let you all have a say in what we discuss.
So saddle up and join the conversation at the Mick and Pat Show. You can check out our website or find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Crikey.
It's a big, big piece of work. And I didn't just make that up. That's about 20 years work.
Yeah.
20 years trying to go, shit, how do we do this? How can we build better? How can we build more affordably? How can we build equitably?
Yeah.
How can we deliver social outcomes and things like that? So, That's almost my working career has been trying to work out that stuff.
Excellent.
And that's what Agile is.
Well, it sounds like you've hit on a good solution.
Thank you. We're not the only people who know this world, but in terms of perhaps all the different moving parts of that were probably fairly unique in terms of bringing all of those things together. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know when this is going out, but we're a startup company, we've got investment, and our big news over the summer will be Crisis, the homelessness charity, is investing in Agile. Not because we're a homelessness housing providing business, it's just that model is so powerful in terms of taking costs out of delivering homes for people who need them, that we can actually deal with homelessness, which is the most challenging space to deliver affordable outcomes.
Wow.
So you heard, that's a scoop.
Whoa. You heard it here first, people.
Yes, absolutely. Crisis is investing in Agile.
Oh, fantastic.
And we think that's brilliant.
Yeah, I think so too. It's interesting. The affordability, especially with straw, I think that straw bale building has been sort of marketed by lots of people as this affordable housing option. And I think it's, well, quite often mismarketed. It's misleading, I think, because people just assume natural materials cheap and then they ask someone to build it for them. And they're surprised when it costs lots and lots of money. Not lots and lots of money, but a reasonable amount of money, because they've been sold this idea. But it seems like you're genuinely kind of giving that option.
So our build costs are no cheaper or expensive than the industry would deliver for our high performance building fabric. Yeah. So it's not, we don't build cheap. We just don't pay for land.
Yeah.
And that takes between 40 and 60% of your development costs for building a home in which you can put a key in the front door and have somebody live in it. That's, that land supply at no or low cost is transformative in terms of affordability. So don't tell Taylor Wimpey and Barrett's that's our secret.
I'm sure they
would never seek
to.
And they would never. You know, they make money in a very easy way, and they're very comfortable making their money in their easy way. We're just going to disrupt that.
Yeah.
Very powerfully.
Excellent. One of the things I really enjoyed, I think you just got planning on going up, building on top of the roof of, I forgot the building now.
But Emmaus, the homelessness charity in Bristol, Emmaus.
Yeah.
Yes, so we just got in March, April, we got planning approval to build a community of 15 affordable homes on the rooftop of the Emmaus offices and warehouse in St. Paul's in Bristol. And again, this is this thing about land that's free and hidden in plain sight.
Yep.
So flat roofs is land with a building underneath it. So we've done proposals for car parks. With the demise or the death of retail, as the economists call it, there are lots of multi-story car parks where the top floor is locked off because that you get antisocial behavior. So with Emmaus, building up on flat surfaces, because we don't use foundations, because the TAM, as we call them, our agile homes, have independent structures to allow them to comply with the Caravan Act, that means we can literally pick them up and place them on top of existing structures, and we don't need to drill into those. We do need to fix them, but we don't need to, there are no foundation requirements because they come with their own foundations, as it were.
Yeah.
And that, once you get your eye in, you go, ooh, you can, there's land that's free and hidden in plain sight everywhere. And we've got to do that appropriately. We've got to do that with the community. Emmaus is a community-led housing project working with what Emmaus called companions, people who have lived experience of homelessness. And they were co-designers of that space. And most of the commercial world will go up and do apartments with a corridor down the middle. Corridors down the middle, they're soulless, antisocial spaces, often filled up with pizza flyers and it can be quite scary. So there are no corridors on this development. What there are is a collection of buildings and homes with little courtyard spaces in between, which become the shared courtyard gardens for the community themselves. And if you go to our website, there's a flyover which starts inside one of the courtyards with a picture of butterflies and stuff, and then zooms out, and you can see there are 15 homes, and this is a community on the rooftop of an existing building. Again, all made with straw, but again, at that point, the straw now is a kind of given solution, but what we're now doing is innovative in how communities can come together and make the spaces they're going to live in.
Fantastic. I'm intrigued to know, I assume that you're just going to take a very big crane and just sort of truck these buildings in and then lift them up?
Yeah, so we can build in two ways. We can build flat pack or modular. So modular is already assembled. Modular is a very expensive way of building because you have to have very big cranes. Mm-hmm. You know, a two-bedroom home by us weighs 32 tons.
Okay.
That's a big crane lifting up. So what we do is we've IKEA flat pack them in, but they're designed to be moved out afterwards if you want to do that. So the cheaper way is we optimize the build by building flat pack, but you still get the opportunity to move them afterwards, which is a future problem, not a capital problem today.
And then what sort of time frame do you expect that to go from?
So So that project was, because it's community-led housing project, we got community housing grant to do that. So it's now got planning approval. So Jessica Hodge, the CEO of Emmaus and her team, trustees of the charity, are now building up a strategy about how they will bring the rest of the funding in. They've got some of it, but not all of it. And then, so we would hope that by the end of this year, we should be moving into the next stage, which is the making and fabricating and delivery, hopefully for some time next year.
Brilliant. And the actual kind of, you know, standing up the walls and sort of building it, how quickly do you reckon
So we've just done a one-bedroom shell in 5 hours. So there are 15 times 5 hours. No, it's not that quick. It won't be that quick. What happens, there are two types of rooftop developments, one where the roof is strong enough to hold the weight and ones where they're not. So what we do is engineer a table. So effectively, there's a very lightweight table that goes up and over to create a platform. So that'll happen first. Then we bring in the flat pack build systems. So once we've built the frame, the table, the flat pack for 15 homes, I think we will get those up and weather tight within two months. Then there's the painting, decorating and electrics and things like that. So it goes fast, then it goes more traditionally. But we should be able to do it faster than conventional development.
Fantastic. That's so good. And who did you say the occupants are going to be?
So Emmaus is a charity that originates out of France and is a charity that does not have an endowment. So it restores furniture and white goods. It has a shop functioning, so it's a revenue generating charity. The people who have had lived experience of homelessness are called companions. They engage with the making, restoration, etc. So half of the homes will go to companions of Emmaus. The other half will go to people in housing need in Bristol, and it'll all be done at local housing authority rents. So affordable rents.
Fantastic.
So we anticipate 7 will be occupied by formerly homeless people. The other 7.5 or whatever, 8 will be by people, Bristolians.
Brilliant. Oh, it's solving many problems, creating, you know, great things on many levels. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, and your work looking at a tiny home solution for you to live in is you acting individually, working within the systems you have to do that. So All we do is multiply that up and say, how do we help others do that as well? So I think our work is rooted in the same soil your project is rooted. How do you, imagine, how do I as an individual create shelter for myself? And a tiny home is one of the ways where you can have control of that. And I think that's fabulous. All I know is not everybody's like Jeffrey. Some of their challenges would not allow in their life, their experience, their know-how wouldn't allow them to imagine that they might be able to do that, let alone kind of, haul the way through their planning processes. So we effectively, in investor language, we're a middleware solution, joining up how you make things to how people need homes and trying to work the material, the finance, the land, the legal aspects of all of that. So our work innovates as a thin layer, but joins people up to where their homes might be.
Lovely.
So we're now miles away from straw bale.
Well, that's it. I wanted to say to you, I've noticed, I saw your videos, that you've gone away from straw bale. You're doing loose straw.
Yes.
Why the change?
So straw bales are fabulous, but the number one question everybody asks is, how big is a bale and how do you work to the module of bales? And that is fabulous. It's also a tyranny of, is the baler going to give us the same bale size? Will it be at the right density, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And also, conventional bales are starting to become less common as farmers go to round bales and Heston bales and the bigger bales because they just want to manage all of that more efficiently. So actually, bales are becoming a little bit boutique, the kind of 1 meter by whatever size bales. And also, the number one question we would get from commercial developers who go, we think it's great, but your walls are so higher than the building regulations require. Can you make them thinner? And so you can turn a bale on its side. Yes, you can shave bales. You can cut a bale in half, at which point you're just spending too much time. And then you go to chop straw. And at that point, we can have whatever wall thickness we want. So an agile home, we call them TAMs. So the floor and roof would comply with the passive house standard, but our wall, which is where we want to maximize human occupation, is thinner. And then we go with triple glazing. So we optimize, and I couldn't do that with a bale system. So we are doing it with chopped straw. And what we have found, we've just done, again, this is an exclusive, we've managed to improve the U value that we can get from chopped straw over and above conventional bales, because conventional bales are in the control of a farmer making them, not us.
Yeah.
Now, at that point, you don't get that lovely, let's lift bales in, let's, you don't get that what every child wants to do when it sees some bales is stack them into a house and a home. You don't get that, but we are still working with renewable materials with all the benefits. And we are actually able to creep up the U value to a higher level. And then, because we then use compressed straw board.
Yep.
So we are using even more straw than we were before. But the compressed straw board and chopped straw combination allows us to vary the wall thicknesses to suit. So we still build with bales, but we are building less with bales today than we have ever done.
Yeah. And so is it? Are you blowing it in like you would do a sort of cellulose type?
No, we found blowing. You've got to get a consistent length, which is optimal for settlement. This is top secret, 20 millimeters. There you go. That's another exclusive. 20 millimeters is the optimized size for chopping straw. And then you are making sure that you understand its settlement. Therefore, you have to put in a particular density. And blowing straw, you get something called lensing.
Okay.
So you could blow in and it goes in too dense in a little block and then not dense enough somewhere else. So what we do is we build up the panels on their back The chop straw comes to us de-dusted, clean, no weeds, no stones, no nothing in it, because it's animal bedding, basically. They are another secret one. And it comes pre-bagged. We know the density of the bag. We know the size of the panels. And we just say, we need to get straw in at this density across the whole of that. So the panels are on the back. The straw is poured in and then fluffed and then oversized. And then when you put the compressed straw board panels on top, it compresses it down to the density we need. Then it can stand up and the straw won't settle.
Yeah.
And we've done, we did a very boring 18-month test on shaking straw to find out what its settlement rate is.
Yeah.
So the density of the straw goes in to overcome the settlement.
Fantastic.
So it's not as pure, and for some people, who build traditionally in straw, they might go, this is heresy, and I understand that, but I know I can get affordable homes into people's hands using that technique.
Well, it's something I've been saying for a while, noticing that on the sort of more artisan stacking bales, plastering them style build, that... you spend nearly half the build plastering, and if you attach a cost to that, it's a big cost, and so that's my thoughts was blown in seemed to also make sense.
I think I think that's great, because that is people learning how to make, being involved and making, and also often not getting paid because they're learning, and it's like an experiential thing for lots of people. And you can't scale that. That's hard to scale. You can't do a build system that relies on an element of volunteering. You can to some extent, but it won't build the number of homes that we need. So I'm kind of driven about that question about how do you bring this wonderful material sets into the mainstream.
Yeah. And then, I guess it's the standard old question. Loose fill straw is, how are you putting it into a sort of sealed container? So I'm thinking of air and fire and the usual questions.
So we're a closed panel solution. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the closing of the panel brings the fire compartmentation, so we fire rate to whatever standard people need, but typically for a vertical wall it's 1 hour. Mm-hmm. At that point we're relying on so we don't use plasterboard, we use Fermacell. That's just another kind of material choice we make. So it has 30 minutes, then the compressed straw board has 30 minutes, and then at that point you will have got people out of the building safely. That's long enough for the fire engines to arrive and do their thing. And so chop straw, once you've burned through that hour of protection, we found it in two things. It either falls out or it just stays there and chars.
Right.
So a straw bale, as a bale, has a char rate. And even when the elastic has gone, the twine on a bale, when it goes in a fire test, the bale kind of holds itself together. Chopped straw, compressed, does have a bit of hold, but it will cascade out, and at which point it's just, it's burning.
Yes.
But we will have got people safely out of the building.
Fantastic. As one other thing I noticed is that you've switched to clay plasters internally.
Yes, because when you go to a compressed straw board, you are dry lining. Mm-hmm. Then you've got to work out how you are you putting a second layer of plaster, or in our case, Fermacell. And then Fermacell can be self-finished. And clay plaster we apply to the partitions, which are compressed straw board. So we're using plaster only on the partitions. Uh-huh. Because the Fermacell is the lining of the external walls. And we moved lime plaster on lime render and plasters on straw bale. It has to be about 40 millimeters thick. And it's quite an expensive way to seal a wall. And so the economies of that drove us towards dry lining, containing. It also allowed us to use chop straw. So there was a whole series of steps. So we can still do lime plaster, but or lime renders, but the price of those is higher than using our new system. Or we have three ways of building with straw, and then you then move to clay plasters for partitions, because we're now, you know, that's aesthetic, it's moisture managing and stuff like that, and it's better than plaster.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone should clay plaster their walls. It's the go-to choice for me. I wish it was a more popular or more common thing.
Then the kind of, it's also, you touch these materials differently to gypsum plaster. There is something this goes back to the human-centered design. There's something intuitive about these material sets. So, for example, glulam timber frame buildings, columns and etc., and steel framed ones and concrete ones, people touch timber. They don't tend to touch steel, unless you're an engineer. So there is something about humans and materials, about what we want, what we're happy in touching. And that brings us back to health, well-being, and building syndrome, and working with natural materials. So there is something, some people say it's spiritual. It can be, and I'm happy for people to talk that way. Other ones, it's just better than materials, and you want to touch good stuff. People just intuitively want to touch nice things.
Yeah.
And clay, timber, lime plaster all fall into that category.
Lovely. Yeah. It's sort of... I've been looking a lot at sort of biophilic design and biophilia, and that sort of, people are happier when they are contained in natural materials and they can see them, and just the grain on some wood is sort of enough to trigger that sort of biophilic response. And so I see that a lot. People, when where they walk into a natural house, they normally say it feels different. The sort of sort of quantifiable feeling, and I think that's them responding to just natural sort of stimulus, I think.
I think so, and I think the most common word we get for our buildings is calm. This is obviously an anecdotal, qualitative expression, and I think what it is there is a combination of things that are happening that make people use the word calm. There is something about acoustics in straw bales. I think that's to do with its mineral content and the thickness of the wall and its ability to diffuse. Then we were talking moisture. And so I like that calm. It sounds like a very subjective word, but I think it is a combination of a lot of, I think there's a lot of science in there. And we need to understand the science of these things. And then we can... I think once we start, if we can unpack some of that, we can start to quantify and deliver more of it. For others who say, don't unpack the magic, you can't unpack magic. So I can say, well, that's fine. We'll do both. You can have the magic and we'll try and work out what's going on, because if we can work out what's more going on, we can do more of it.
Yes, we can create the magic at will.
Yeah, absolutely. Wouldn't that be nice?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, wasn't that just excellent? So many thanks to Craig for being an excellent guest, giving us exclusive info, and for just generally being great fun. As per usual, the show notes have links to all the stuff we've talked about, so be sure to check those out. And if this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe and have a look through the previous episodes. I think if you've enjoyed Craig, you'll enjoy a lot more in there. And if you would like to support the show financially, go to patreon.com/buildingsustainability. Also, remember that sharing is caring, so get this episode shared as far as possible and show that you care. That's it. Thanks for listening. You are the best.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.